that's an open letter to Duke from Charles Mingus. We thank Ben Terrell. He was the one that turned us on to that CD. And sitting here in the studio is Ben Terrell. And he also, not only does he turn us on to good music, but he also works with Haiti Action Network. And I understand you've got some updates. You were actually down in Haiti just a couple of weeks ago and certainly keeping up with events down there. Tell us.
That's right. Yeah, I was in Haiti. Well, I went for a week in July, but I went back in August for 2 weeks. And I was involved with human rights monitoring and taking testimony from survivors of a number of massacres perpetrated by both Haitian police and death squads working with the Haitian police. And we also spoke to family and friends of victims of attacks that were committed by the so-called peacekeepers, UN peacekeepers down there. And just recently, this past Friday, there was an action at the San Francisco Federal Building. I was one of 18 people who were arrested, did civil disobedience, and I think there's footage of the action that our friend Bill Carpenter put up at IndieBay.org. And yeah, listening to our friend talk about New Orleans reminded me of stuff that Haitians were saying about New Orleans. And, you know, the people in Haiti really got it. And we interviewed Father Gerard Jean-Just, who is the one activist in Haiti that really has the respect of the majority of the people, that's the poor majority, to the extent that he would be a viable presidential candidate. There are these presidential elections that are coming up in November that are pretty much being stage managed by the UN, France, Canada, the US are sort of pushing these elections and they're using it as a way to marginalize the majority of the people who are in the Lavalas party. Which Father Jean-Just is sort of intimately connected to. And when I interviewed Father Jean-Just in prison, he sent, you know, this heartfelt message of solidarity to the people of New Orleans, and it wasn't in any way perfunctory or kind of predictable. It was really from the heart and from the gut, and he you know, being Haitian and being a Haitian who works with the poorest of the poor in Haiti, he's been through similar things. And in fact, last year there was a storm that came through and killed thousands in Gonaïves. And the reason that so many people were killed was because subsequent to the February 29th, 2004 coup, that forced President Aristide and his administration, which included almost 7,000 elected officials, out of office, the illegal coup regime, with the backing of the U.S., France, and Canada, has been waging war on the Lavalas party. So they forced all these people into hiding, including the emergency response network people on the ground. So they had no emergency response network, and consequently many, many more people died than would have if the democratically elected government of President Aristide was in place. So there are a lot of connections between New Orleans and Haiti, and I hope that we can get a recording of our friend Pierre Laboisier's speech at the action on Friday, because he talked at some length with great power and insight into these connections. There are thousands of cab drivers in New Orleans are from Haiti. There's a big Haitian population. There's very, very long historical ties.
One thing that struck me about what you were talking about, you said the elections are being stage managed by the United Nations, France, and the United States. It's significant that stage managed, you know, might sound like a provocative term, but the reality is you know, the neocons are trying to portray the United Nations as well as France as a bunch of, you know, cowards and weak Nellies and all of these slanders that you can come against them. But the United Nations was involved in watching massacres, and France is essentially paying an enormous amount of their resources to essentially reclaiming Haiti. Haiti used to be a colony of France, and they were the, after the American Revolution in 1776, Haiti was the first, it was the second colony to break free from, in this case, France. That was 1804.
Yeah, so, and it was the first first successful slave revolution in history, and as the first independent black republic. And, you know, France in the 19th century, in exchange for diplomatic recognition, they made the, under the administration of Boyer in Haiti, they began this process whereby Haiti had to pay back France for the losses of the French slaves. In the freeing of the slaves. So that under Aristide's administration, after he was elected in 2000, President Aristide put through this proposal that was very popular in Africa and throughout the so-called third world of restitution, whereby France would pay back this enormous amount of money that they essentially stole from Haiti, which is one of the reasons Haiti's the poorest country in the hemisphere, and that comes to a total of $21 billion. So obviously France was not excited about this. There's a great new movie called Aristide and the, I think it's the Endless Revolution, about Haiti, and in that there are French government officials interviewed who talk about how that's just it was unacceptable, blah blah blah, but so they had a very strong reason for backing this coup, which is to keep Haiti from pushing this claim, a very legitimate claim against them.
Right, and as well, you mentioned that Haiti is one of the most impoverished countries, but it's very interesting to note that at the time of the slave revolt in 1804, Haiti, if I understand right, they provided 30% of the wealth or the income of France. Haiti alone.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised it was that high. Yeah, that sounds about right.
The island of Haiti provided 30% of the wealth of France. Huge, lush valleys of incredible agricultural land, and of course they were able to grow sugar and rum down there, so it was high dollar crops. And so Haiti, you know, we think of these countries as being poor and they must be stupid if they're poor, but the reality is it's very much like Ireland. Ireland also was very lush land that people from London owned the land. They kicked people off the land. Everything that was grown there was shipped to London and got the highest price for. So in the case of Haiti, the landowners lived in Paris. All the food and everything was grown and sent back to to France to make a quick franc on, and starvation is because of foreign ownership, and so the starvation and privation of most of the third world nations are simply because of foreign ownership of land. So tell us, for example, there is this fake election coming up. Father Jean-Just is considered the front runner, even though he's in prison, right?
Well, actually, there was a movement to get him on the ballot at the last minute, but the Electoral Council would not allow his name to be registered because they said that the candidate had to bring in the ballot in person. Of course, he's in jail on trumped-up charges. He's a prisoner. Amnesty International has named him a prisoner of conscience. And the many of the other people running were intimately involved in dictatorships in Haiti in the past, including the Duvalier, Papadoc Duvalier administration. There's a former mayor of Port-au-Prince who is one of the key people behind a massacre where the right wing attempted to kill then father Aristide in 1988. There's Guy Philippe is running for president. There was an awful PBS documentary that was whitewashed recently. It was to Bill Moyers' discredit, was aired on Bill Moyers' show recently, that attempted to whitewash Guy Philippe's record. Guy Philippe is a former police chief in Haiti who was trained by the U.S., who the U.S. Embassy and the DEA admits is intimately involved in the drug trade. He was one of the key paramilitary leaders behind the February 2004 coup that came over from the Dominican Republic with the support of the U.S. and forced out the Aristide administration. I'd just like to read one a sentence real quickly from a piece by international human rights lawyer Brian Kincannon that was on Counterpunched. I posted it on Indie Bay recently. It was written last week. He said, Haiti's electoral rolls have been cleansed by discouraging voters through political persecution and by imposing hurdles that disproportionately affect poorer Haitians. It is now towards the end of the third prolongation of the registration period, and despite substantial non-electoral incentives to register, registration has been declared necessary to obtain the national ID card required for passports and driver's licenses. Only about 2.4 million of Haiti's 4.5 million eligible voters have registered. Where Haiti's democratic governments, including under President Aristide, who was always attacked for being undemocratic, provided over 10,000 voter registration offices and polling places for elections, the interim government is aspiring to 424 registration offices. So you can see what's going on down there just from that quick thumbnail overview from Brian. The death squads and the repression have not slowed down. In fact, the day that we had our demonstration here, just September 30th on Friday, and there were, I believe, 43 demonstrations throughout the world. It's an anniversary of the first coup that drove out Aristide in the early 90s. On that day, the demonstration